sound. And you know we say fight the power.
Fight the power.
This is how the revolution sound. And you know we say
I'm going full Magneto. I don't really care if haters really don't agree though. Killers in the streets and they weapon is police, claiming they ain't got no beef or steady, only eating keto. But we about to change that today. Your clans with guns and badges, they won't be safe. Your pipes that poison lands, no, they won't be safe. It's time to fight with us or get back the way. Because revolution steady right on the itinerary. I'm sick of seeing all my people in obituaries. Stay mad, Karen, we don't give an F-bomb. Blow it up by any means necessary. Have to say that I could be a revolutionary. I believe it, I can feel it in my capillaries. We out here and we showing no fear. Revolution's coming near, you don't want us as an adversary.
Fight the power!
Fight the power!
Sound. And you know we say fight the power.
Fight the power.
This is how the revolution sound.
Hey,
and
Blaze.
You know we say
how the richest on the earth got so many needs. I'm a giant, so they looking like my mini-me's. Never been a killer, but the world is tempting me. Steady killing me, but would never put an end to me. Fight the power, so in public, I'm the enemy. Privately contending with intentions of my energy. System all cap, feel like Kaepernick when he in the league. Overcoming haters like John Taylor, we in the lead. I deserve this gold medal. It's from the soil where we once settled. They want to spoil everyone's ghetto. My future son is about to know the level of expectation to be a black man in this generation. Cause this time, the revolution will be televised. Bringing the evolution of mankind. When you hear me speak, you can tell I'm wise. Truth set us free, that's why they tell us lies. Questioning everything I recognize.
Fight the power!
Fight the power!
This is how the revolution sound. And you know we say fight the power!
Fight the power!
This is how the revolution sound. And you know we say
you can murder a liberator, but you can't murder liberation. You can murder a revolutionary, but you can't murder a revolution. Freedom fighter, but you can't murder freedom. Hey, revolutionary. Hey, revolutionary.
You want a revolution?
It's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah, it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah, it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah, it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah, it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah, it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah, it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah, it's coming, coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yes, it's coming. Revolution's coming, yeah, it's coming, coming.
Views from the ground.
Views from the darn ground.
Views from the ground.
Views from the darn ground.
Views from the ground.
Views from the darn ground.
And that's on that, on that, on that. All right. You are here with your favorite agender host, DJ. I use they, them pronouns. And we are here live on KFAI 90.3 and WFNU Frogtown Radio. I have a very special musical guest in the house.
What's up, everybody? It's your girl, Krishana.
Yes, and welcome back to the show, Krishana.
Thank you for having me.
And, you know, we got some new music that's out.
Yes, we absolutely do. And, you know, this is an exclusive here with you, DJ Hooker, so thank you for having me. It'll actually be out tomorrow on June 19th. What a beautiful day.
What a beautiful day. So let's get right into it and listen to it.
Yes.
So here we go with The Best in Me.
I've been searching all night long. I found you now, I won't be lost. You teach me so I can't go wrong.
When you're the one who leads me,
you don't have to beg me, please. I know that you're the one I need. Everything you give to me,
reveal my identity.
It ain't my fault, I'm so fly, baby. Just real talk, cause that's how you made me. The way I move when I do your
like you. I can't find nobody. Can't find nobody like you, no. I've been searching all my life, yeah. Ain't no one like you, no. Nobody like you, no. I've been searching all my life, yeah. Ain't no one like you, no.
All right, welcome back to Views from the Ground.
Views from the darn ground.
We just got listening to Best in Me. Such a great song.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Like, it's true, true labor of love and straight from my heart. It is the first single off of my fourth project that I'm so excited to share with everybody. And as we get into it, I'll just share a little bit of the inspiration.
Yeah. So go ahead. And what was the inspiration for such a banger?
The inspiration for this really is my journey in faith. I really, really want to be an example. And, you know, we have one life to live. And when we leave here, the biggest thing is, what does your life say of you? And so the example that I want to give in every song that I put out is a message of positivity, a message of faith. My faith lies in God. So I always try to do creative ways to share that with the listeners so they can see where my strength comes from. And so I want to really encourage everybody to look deep down in themselves and find out what brings out the best in you. You know, I'm telling you what brings out the best in me. So search yourself, find out what brings out the best in you so you can continue to be a positive light to people and just everybody that comes in contact with you, because we need that. The world, it needs love, needs healing. A lot of people need it. And so that was the inspiration, my journey in faith and my relationship with Christ. So that's what it was all about.
Yeah. And just let us know, the listeners know, what have you been up to since the last time we've seen you? We haven't seen you for a couple of months.
I know. Oh, my gosh. I've been up to recording, been shooting videos. So you guys are going to get a lot of visuals this year. I've been gigging nonstop, and that's been a complete blessing. Again, I'm on my fourth project, and so just doing music has opened up so many doors for me. I'm getting ready and prepped to go back over to the UK for more promotion and marketing. So it's been a busy, busy time for me. Yeah.
Yes. I love that they love you and celebrate you just as much as we do.
So. I know. I'm so grateful, and it's just so much love. DJ Hooker, you, from the first time I met you, you have been a supporter, and I just really appreciate you, just even the opportunity to be here and spread light and love with all of the listeners. With you, I appreciate you.
Of course, we are awaiting your fourth project, so very excitedly. So, do you have any upcoming gigs that you want the listeners to know about?
Actually, I do. This weekend, I have two events that I will be at. One is in Champlain. That'll be the Lafayette Festival. And the other one is the Lafayette Festival is going to be in Champlain, and then there's a Freedom Festival in Vadnais Heights that I'll be at in the evening. So if you guys are there, you can Google it and search it and come on out and enjoy a really, really great time. I also have another event tomorrow, so it's going to be very busy. So I look forward to seeing everybody that can make it out there.
Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate you coming by and doing a real premiere here of your newest single, Best in Me, which comes out tomorrow.
Yes, it does, on Juneteenth. On How cool is that, everybody, on Juneteenth? So excited. And I'm so excited that I got to be here with you to share it, you know, with the listeners, you know, for the first time. So, I mean, my goodness, it can't get any better than that.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for bringing to the Views from the Ground, Views from the Darn Ground.
If you don't know, we had a little remix. Y'all weren't here for that. But yeah, me and DJ Hooker, we had a little remix on that. So Views from the Darn Ground. Yes.
So with that being said, we appreciate you and we'll talk to you soon.
Yes, indeed. I appreciate you for having me. God bless all of y'all.
With that being said, we're going to move over to Nerdy. So take it away, Nerdy.
What is up, my guys, gals, and non-binary pals? It's your boy, Nerdy, back again for another installment of the Fair Play Entertainment Spotlight. And tonight, we have a real treat for you. That's right, June 18th is a day you will always remember because here on Views from the Ground, we are playing music right here from our community. And tonight, it's Locomotion. That's right, green card daddy himself, Mr. Fuego, Fanaka Nation, Locomotion.
Live on Tamu Radio, we got international green card daddy from the 612 about to hit you with that locomotion. Matter of fact, he just came to the back door. Fanaka Nation.
Trio Mio.
Call me Mr. Fuego, baby.
Wow, 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 wow.
Mavo on the beat.
Mama is a queen and she tests all my stamina. And she tests all my stamina. When she work, work, I gotta pull on my camera. Give me the light, light. Might go crazy if you give me locomotion. When she do it just like that is with devotion. Bouncing queen, queen, never gonna stop ya. Especially when you throw it like a helicopter. Mr. Fuego, eh. Eh, Mr. Fuego, eh. Mr. Fuego, eh. I am Mr. Fuego.
Fiska duni gosholo Iyo hagandu inaweza sura ni ongongo Kitemeo na kietepa jaba inadonjo Zimerit na mapema tema kidogo Kwela ntaku move na gang Nikamwambia zi baby girl just let me do my thing Kijana mdogo npenda do them thing Wita Mr. T the plama joma boom bambe Chiki mebe bumpini seza Steven Pingi skill ni mingi mshena wika chili mezidi pus Kame nyamaza chinya sin vitimbi spin Ulimi skia nafanya msing na cheesy Digide na tingi show na digi kukitenda Drop it down and pick it up, even don't apprenda Doni kona Lydia, kesho kona Brenda Fenye na wa mix na wa timbira kwa blender Fanaka nation, bash na soma ratio Last maki formation, nyash nyumba ya nisho What in occupation, gram wana ni mention Trio mio the boy, one in the gesho
Mr. Fuego, te amo You like my la 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 Mr. Fuego, te amo You like my la 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 la
Baby girl, she really wanna go commando But I don't like to make love up in my sandals Might go crazy if you give me locomotion Might go crazy if you give me locomotion LA, they go say Dunda Nairobi, they go say Dunda Minneapolis, they go say Dunda
Motion. All right, welcome back to Views from the Ground, Views from the Damn Ground. We are here on KFAI 90.3 and WFMU Frogtown Radio. This is DJ Love. Coming up next, we're actually going to have 15 with Nico G. So take it away, Nico.
Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone. Welcome to 15 with Nico G. My name is Nico Georgiadis. I'm an independent journalist, filmmaker, and co-founder of Unicorn Riot. You can find my work at nicog.work and unicornriot.ninja. Thanks again so much, DJ, for the spot on your wonderful show, Views from the Ground. Thanks to the amazing listeners and thanks to KFAI. I'm here for 15 minutes every month's third Wednesday, examining and connecting views from the ground locally and internationally. Tonight, I'm going to start here in Minneapolis, where it's likely that listeners have heard about the federal search warrant on Lake Street on June 2nd that was carried out by the newly minted Homeland Security Task Force, which had the combined alphabet soup of all the federal government law enforcement agencies, and how the community then defended itself, thinking it was an immigration raid. Well, it's been talked about on the show and elsewhere. Also at unicornriot.ninja, we have some reports on it. Well, last week has been talked about. The Department of Justice pressed federal assault charges on one of the participants of the community defense for allegedly assaulting agents during the chaos. I bring this up to touch on one specific thing, narrative wars. Directly after law enforcement violently attacked community defenders attempting to block their path down Lake Street, narrative wars began online and in the press. Politicians bashed federal authorities, and then they all joined forces and bashed anyone with the assumption that the raid was an immigration raid. The mainstream press then amplified that push against community defense. The feds then played another part in the narrative war. After they arrested Issa Lopez for community defense, they said she allegedly assaulted a federal agent. She got arrested outside of Georgia Fort's office right after Georgia was interviewing her. After she gets arrested, they unseal her indictment. And Special Agent Monica Evans provides several pages of detailed information on the criminal investigation that led to the searches, even though it's not related to Lopez's actions. So in the probable cause of the complaint, Agent Monica Evans is writing multiple pages of detailed information about an alleged giant meth bust of historic 900 pounds, a couple of handguns similar to ones, quote, seized from narco traffickers, unquote. And there was several portraits of the movie Scarface that were scattered throughout the complaint. They seriously bragged about finding Scarface posters in the complaint. It's these details that some press then combined into the charges on Lopez, where in effect they demonize community defenders without questioning the wider picture of the violent, chaotic raid, and then conflated their complaint. So, you know, background information is needed in a federal complaint filed by an agent. It's all, that's normal procedure. However, the extent of the high profile details, the fact that they still have no arrests on the drug investigation and the indictments for that are still sealed, that raises way more questions and are applied differently to Lopez. Like, according to the agents, Lopez's warrant had to be sealed for safety measures. However, they publicly divulged all the details of the largest meth seizure in Minnesota history while keeping those indictments sealed. So the public still has not been told when this alleged 900 pounds of meth was found, and there's been no arrests so far. Meanwhile, the Trump regime has started mutating all the federal agencies to focus solely on immigrants. And as you've seen, raids are occurring in Twin Cities and across the country. And the military is even being used to raid swap meets in California to check people's papers. This isn't going as smoothly as the government would like, however. Anti-ICE sentiments have spread far and wide. Communities across the country have been attempting to block federal agents from entering areas and leaving areas. Pitched battles have already occurred. We saw communities fight back in LA metro area for several days before a massively repressive response by the Trump regime and Democratic Los Angeles authorities totally quelled most of the dissent with violence. and narrative wars. We see now an echoing of the Occupy ICE movement from 7 years ago. An encampment has grown in Portland outside the federal building. Throughout the day and the night, protesters are like attempting to block vehicles from going in and out, and they're met with violent arrests, being shot with crowd control munitions like pepper balls, and beaten by federal agents. In Seattle, there's a Lime bike barricade outside of a federal building, reportedly stopping ICE agents from abducting more people. You could check out a report at theburnerseattle.com. ICE agents had been calling in sick. The activists had organized themselves to watch all appointments that ICE was holding and count the people going in and out, and then attempt to stop ICE agents from deporting people. And so they were also met with hyper-violent federal forces. These are just a few of the many, many actions that are happening all across the country. You see consistently Delaney Hall being mentioned. That's in New Jersey. It's a private immigration detention center ran by the GEO Group. Four people held by ICE were recently able to escape by kicking through the wall and just hopping over a fence. The building was so cheaply built, there was drywall and some mesh, and they kicked right through the wall and hopped over a fence and dipped out. Two of them have got caught so far. That's the same detention center, if you remember, in May, where Newark Mayor Ross Baraka was arrested. He was arrested along with New Jersey Representative LaMonica McIver. And last week, the feds indicted McIver on charges of impeding and interfering with law enforcement officials. She's a black congresswoman. She condemned the charges as politically motivated. Since then, she's been a target of far-right groups and some really intense online racism. On the topic of politicians, we obviously in Minnesota had the act of domestic terrorism, and that so far somehow has not been called terrorism. Also, a not surprising twist, the local mainstream media has gone mostly into overdrive to humanize and personalize the assassin and stay focused on how nice of a person he was and how he may have had mental health issues, etc., etc. Really, while glossing over how he came from a family of law enforcement, how he was so comfortable in the cloak of white supremacy to play his role as a make-believe cop and go to the homes of officials to kill them based on radical crystal fascist ideologies. It's quite the sick display of racism when we hear that this man's family was questioned and let go while traveling in a pack with money and weapons, and that he's arrested without even a black eye to show for it. Additional stories from that whole incident paint an inept and aggressive law enforcement response that took full credit for mostly what the public did. It was the landlord that called the police and told them where the killer was staying in Minneapolis. It was the neighbor out in the rural area who saw Bolter. It wasn't the police. He had evaded them several times. And even that new information about evading them in New Hope before he went to kill Hortman and her husband. He just rolled by a police officer. They weren't stopping any crime. Pretty horrific stuff from the killings to the narrative play. Meanwhile, switching gears, war between Israel and Iran has kicked off to a mostly historic level, and the genocide, ethnic cleansing of Palestinians continues unabated. Not only has Israel dropped what has amounted to 6 nuclear bombs in Gaza in the last 20 months, it's continuing its military operations throughout the occupied West Bank and occupied Jerusalem. Settler violence is on the rise continually.
Without going too deep and too far into the past, we all know that since 2007, Israel's blockaded the Gaza Strip by land, air, and sea, effectively controlling the borders, allowing really only a small list of items to come in to a 25-mile stretch of historic lands that sits on the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. Since the war on Gaza started in October 2023, as with other wars in times of strife, Israel tightens the locks on the largest open-air prison in the world of Gaza, right? And so, actually, since March 2025, Israel has not allowed any food, any water, any humanitarian aid into the Gaza Strip whatsoever. In January of this year, Israel's ban on UNRWA went into effect. UNRWA is the branch of the United Nations that handled Palestinian refugee affairs since the Nakba in 1949. If you don't know about Nakba, that was when Israel forcibly displaced nearly 1 million Palestinians from their homeland to build the State of Israel. The Israeli government has been against the United Nations, calling them a terrorist organization, calling UNRWA a terrorist organization, because the United Nations has effectively continued to call Israel out for its war crimes and for its genocide. Who was providing aid in all of these essential needs for Palestinians in the occupied Gaza Strip and the occupied West Bank was UNRWA. UNRWA, now banned, has been replaced by an Israeli and United States-backed Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, as mentioned. Food, as we know, is also being used as a weapon of war by Israel. There's been numerous Palestinians who have starved to death in the last 20 months, and currently, with this tight lockdown on the Gaza Strip, replacing UNRWA with the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation is forcing Palestinians into 4 aid distribution points. Those 4 set across the Gaza Strip, which used to be hundreds from UNRWA, are cattling hungry Palestinians into lines, into certain areas. What we've seen since the U.S. and Israeli-backed Gaza Humanitarian Foundation's creation is Palestinians being slaughtered while attempting to get aid. Over 400 Palestinians have been killed in the last 3 weeks just trying to get food. At least 70 were killed on Tuesday, June 17th. Unicorn Riot's been covering a lot of the happenings in Gaza. We have a contributor in Gaza named Mohammed. You can find all their work at unicornriot.ninja. He recently interviewed Dr. Ahmed Salwan in English, so I'm going to play this for you, inside the Rafah's last remaining hospital, who gave a quick message to the world after having an influx of victims come into the hospital while trying to receive aid. We're gonna hear from him right now.
The hospital resources keep getting choked by lack of supplies and lack of resources and lack of space and the overwhelming amount of casualties. And my message to the world is that these people need help, this needs to stop. It's not a political message, it's a humanitarian message. They need food, they need aid, they deserve their right to live.
For many years, international activists have been attempting to break the siege on Gaza by organizing boycott, divest, and sanction movements, flotillas, and marches on Gaza, and many more. In the past 2 months, there's been 2 attempts by the Freedom Flotilla Coalition that have been met by Israeli forces in international waters. In May, a boat called the Conscious was carrying aid and activists to Gaza, was hit by 2 drones in Maltese waters, and was forced to stop its route. Israel has not confessed to using the drones to hit that boat. Last week, Israeli drones dropped white chemicals and what many assumed was paint onto the Madleen, which was another boat of celebrity activists, including Greta Thunberg, that was attempting to reach Gaza. And all of the activists on that boat were detained by Israeli forces and forced to watch October 7th propaganda by Israel before being deported. Along with the sea routes is the land routes, and what was supposed to be a march on Gaza that was starting in Egypt was crushed by Egyptian authorities. Hundreds, if not thousands, of international activists came to Egypt and were met at different checkpoints and physically beaten, had their phones, laptops, and other materials stolen, passports taken. I wanted to play a couple report backs that were published by Middle East Eye to give you just a brief view as to what was happening.
Dozens of violent thugs in civilian clothes started to attack us despite the fact that we were totally peaceful.
This walk to Gaza is an initiative among many others in order to raise public awareness and put pressure on international governments so there might be an end to this genocide.
I'm Komar Migerge, or Giras, a Jewish Hungarian living in Portugal. Like many others, I joined the global march to Gaza.
My name is Mahiev and I am from the Canadian delegation that was flying to Cairo in order to walk from Al-Arish to Gaza. Unfortunately, despite many efforts, our will to attract public attention, either from our governments or general society, was met with hostility from the Egyptian government. And because of that, sadly, we could not even get close to Al-Arish.
I arrived to Cairo in the early morning of 13th of June, Friday, with 3 other activists. We attempted to reach Ismailia, where the actual march was supposed to start from. Our taxi was stopped at the second checkpoint, where all foreign nationals were stopped. So we spent most of the day there with hundreds and hundreds of people from all around the world. After sunset, dozens of violent thugs in civilian clothes started to attack us. They took away our passports and phones. We were taken to a faraway police station where we spent the night in a jail cell. In the morning, we were handcuffed and taken to Cairo Airport, from where we were all deported.
So despite the fact that we did not reach our initial goal, we are still very proud that we managed to talk to international media and report what is currently going on in Gaza. This expedition was not in vain. On the opposite, I think we are only beginning. This will be one of many initiatives of the sort, and let's keep fighting.
Unicorn Ride had a contributor there, and we'll have a first-hand account from the scene on our website soon. With the happenings happening, it's becoming more and more prevalent to think critically about the narrative that different media sources are publishing, how they're using passive voices, and how they use language to demonize others. Well, that's it for me. My time has run out. Thanks for joining us this month for 15 with Nico G. Check out my work at nicog.work and unicornride.ninja. Back to you, DJ.
Entrepreneurship.
Neighborhood Development Center is offering the Planet Fall Cohort, a multi-week training program designed to support individuals in developing a business plan.
The program covers key topics such as budgeting, marketing, and business operations with guidance from experienced instructors.
Participants will also have the chance to engage with peers, exchange ideas, and learn from guest speakers with experience in various industries.
Applications are now open. That deadline is June 27th. Find more information at ndc-mn.org.
Do you get tired of never-ending hagglers at your garage sale?
Excuse me, you've got this marked at 15 cents. Will you take 12 and a half?
Well, when you host your garage sale through the KFAI Garage Sale Tour, you'll have the perfect reason to stick to your guns.
These bowling shoes aren't my size, so I should get a discount.
Sign up to be part of the KFAI Garage Sale Tour. KFAI will promote your garage sale, and you donate part of the proceeds. It's a great way to clean out the garage and support KFAI.
Hey, there's a scratch on this football helmet.
Just go to kfai.org/garage sale for more details and to sign up.
I'm looking for some cheap skates.
Have you tried this mirror?
To the moon, trying to get to you, talking to the moon.
Yo, yo, yo. Welcome back to Views from the Ground.
Views from the Ground.
We are here live on KFAI 90.3 FM and also on WFMU Frogtown Radio. This is DJ Love, and I'm being joined in the studio here by Lisa Keys. And Lisa Keys is going to tell us about her son, Brandon Keys, who was murdered by the cops on December 7th, 2023, so.
Yeah, so my son, Brandon, was experiencing a mental health crisis. He had been pleading with his son's mother to see his son and was having a very difficult time dealing with being denied his right to be an active father. It actually affected his sobriety. He was dealing with some chemical dependency. And according to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension's data, which is, for the most part, all the information that we have from what happened that day, Brandon was, this whole encounter was less than, it was about 7 seconds. And so it's very important to make the community aware of what's going on with these police killings. I found some information on the MinnesotaRecorder.com that is talking about, you know, how, where we rate in terms of cities of 100,000 people or more in the country. So Minneapolis and St. Paul are, I believe, the third and fourth deadliest in the country for cities that have that size of population. And so I want people to know more about what happens when these things happen. When a 911 call is made and the police show up, they have a duty and a responsibility to do their job. You know, if someone commits a crime, there's a due process of law. This is not something that they don't get to play judge, jury, and executioner at the scene, you know, based on their own personal experiences or bias. I think that this is a community safety issue. This makes it unsafe for citizens. It makes it unsafe for the communities that these police shootings happen in. And it also is unsafe even for the cops, because how long can you oppress people, or how long can you treat people differently before there's a response to that? And so this is something that needs to be addressed. The way that we've been treated as a family since this happened has been despicable. Once your loved one's life is taken, then you become a suspect. We were secretly recorded by the BCA. Well, let me back up a little bit. So after Brandon was shot by the officer, he had a gunshot wound to his head. He was placed on his stomach, handcuffed, and no aid was rendered for about 7 minutes. And so they decided to do what's called a load and go. This incident happened kind of kitty corner from a golf course in a college area near St. Thomas College on Creighton and Vandalia and Marshall in St. Paul. And so they did what's called a load and go. And so from the police data that we've gotten, there's no statements or anything from the paramedics that were there on the scene. So I've looked at other, you know, similar situations, and they are required to give a statement just like the police are required to give a statement. There's between 50 and 100 police officers that gave a statement that day that would have arrived on the scene after Brandon was killed, because Brandon was the only, Michael Tashita, the officer that killed him, was the only officer there. He arrived by himself, and it was just him. So, like I said, there's like 150 to 100 statements from police officers just saying, I got there and this is what this is what I saw afterwards. But there's no statements from any paramedics who were actually allegedly caring for Brandon at that time. But they decided to take him to the hospital to do what's called a load and go, even though he had no pulse at the scene. And so when we got to the hospital, there was a group there called Healing Streets, I believe they're called. They're kind of like a in between the police, trying to keep the peace, I think, when these things happen. But we didn't know who they were, and we thought they were there to help. And so we were brought through the hospital. We had to go the back way. Like, we didn't use the elevator and just go upstairs. We were brought on this floor, and then we crossed here, and it was like we were being hidden. We didn't know at the time why. And then we were put in a room with a microphone, and we didn't know that. And so we were told that they were, you know, performing life-saving measures and that they would do the best that they could to save Brandon. But ultimately what happened is we were interviewed without, you know, any consent or them telling us that we were being interviewed. And then as soon as the officer, who had sustained an injury as well, was okay and released, then we were told that, you know, Brandon could not be saved. And within three days after Brandon was killed, there was over $136 medical bill charged against his estate that was racked up. And from what we know now, his head wound was not survivable. It's very rare that someone would survive that type of gunshot wound. And, you know, there's just been so many things that have happened along the way that make it impossible for me to just accept that my son is the villain that they've portrayed him to be in the media, and that he did something wrong that day that somehow deserved for him to lose his life. We have to have more compassion for people. A mental health crisis can happen to anyone. There's nothing that, in the times that we're living in today, there's a lot of people that are struggling mentally. And so when we call 911, we're calling for help. He needed help that day. He didn't get help that day. He paid the ultimate sacrifice with his life. But it's so important to, again, just express that the families are denied what is by law available to them through data practice acts. All these laws and things have been put into place, but who is making the police or any of these systems enforce them? Every time I try to get something that belongs to my son, I've been met with resistance, and I've had to involve community groups that speak out against police violence. I've had to involve, you know, people that I know that work in the law field. And when it should just be, you know, a matter of asking or filling out the proper forms and getting the data. But that's not what happens. Brandon was in the morgue for 5 months. We couldn't even, you know, lay his body to rest. And we were being told that this was all being investigated, and that's why we couldn't have his body. But there's so many, it's insult to injury. Today I just learned that this officer, Michael Tashita, was given an award basically by a group that, you know, protects police in these cases, that provides lawyers for them, defense funds and things like that for them, as a hero. And without using my son's name, they're basically saying that what he did that day was worthy of being called a hero. But we're, you know, our lives are in shambles, and we still don't have all the answers about what happened to our loved one. I've met so many impacted families that have encouraged me not to give up. And they have all told me that the narrative that's put out there about your loved one, as well as the evidence that's given to you, is never all of what's available. It's sliced, diced, it's redacted. It's hard to follow. It doesn't even look like it's incompetent, in my opinion. And I don't know how the BCA can police the police when they are the police. That doesn't make any sense to me. These investigations need to be done by an independent third party that does not have any affiliation with the legal system or law enforcement, in order for them to be, unbiased. Everything that is put out there, like I said, the victim, the person whose life was taken, is basically a villain in every situation. And then if they had a weapon, then it's, you know, even more so of a villain. However, the police officer is always presented as, you know, a savior, someone that's coming in to protect. And like I said, being called a hero, it's not, a hero doesn't shoot when there's people outside all around, when you didn't even take the time to evaluate what was going on when you got there. There's one thing when you get the phone call, but then you need to reevaluate when you get there. When you accept that dispatch, you still need to see what's going on when you get there, and not use your assumptions or bias or the picture of the person or the description of the person to act when you get there. It's just happening too frequently, and we need action to do something about it. It's good to bring awareness to this issue, but at this point, action has to happen. And that can only happen with unity within the activist community here in the Twin Cities, and also, throughout the country. I get more support from people that don't live here than I do that people that live here in this instance. And I just want to, thank you so much for allowing me to come on here and share some of what's been going on since Brandon was killed, December 7, 2023, because a lot of people don't want to be affiliated or associated with it. There's a lot of high-profile cases that people are aware of, but like I said, this is something that's happening on a regular, consistent basis. Quite a few people have been killed in St. Paul since Brandon was killed by the police, and you're going to see most media, you're going to hear a blurb about it, and then it goes away. And then, like I said, the family is left there to try and figure out what happened to their loved one, how to get back their belongings, how to make some type of sense out of what has happened. And then we're turned into, you know, just we're the bad guys too, for requesting what we're entitled to and for wanting to know what happened that day. You know, it's been a long journey and it's been exhausting, and I just can't say enough about speaking out. When you see something, speak about it then. If you're out there and you saw something that day, if you know something about what happened to Brandon and you want to reach me, please reach out to me. You can find me on social media, Justice for Brandon Keys. So please let me know where this has been the worst experience of my life. And every day I fight to turn this pain into purpose and to make sense of it. And for all the rest of my days, I will speak out about what's happening and be the voice of the voiceless. I am his voice now. And I will continue to do it at every opportunity that I get, and to expose a system, you know, that it's a system. It's not just the police department. It's the city and county attorneys. It's the mayor's office. It's all these different systems within the system that support this type of violence happening in our communities. And it has to stop. And just because you're not hearing about incidents does not mean that they're not happening. It's election time, so things are going to get quieter. You know, people are worried about their seats, their office, that type of thing. But the numbers don't lie. Like I said, we're one of the deadliest. St. Paul, we're right on the other side of the river from the horrible act that happened to George Floyd. But you don't hear about the killings in St. Paul. You just don't hear about them like you do Minneapolis. And for those of us families whose loved one's name is not put out there, like I said, I represent them. And I'll be their voice. There's, I could sit here for an hour and name names of families that I've met that have had to go through this ordeal. And even something such as, you know, trying to keep a memorial. I've put up several things at Brandon's memorial where he was killed, and it's taken down every time. Someone keeps disrespecting his grave and taking flowers, breaking his vase and that type of thing. And, you know, there's just, again, too much hate and not enough love out here. And so my love for Brandon will never end. And he finished his course here, but I'm going to take it from here and make sure that I continue to speak out against police brutality and police violence of any kind. And I encourage the listeners to do the same. You know, get involved. Know their names. These are people. These are human beings. They have families. They have a lot, you know, they have dreams, aspirations. They have things that they should be here for. And I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy. I really wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy.
Thank you so much. We are here with Lisa Keys, Brandon Keys' mother. And this wasn't even the first person he has killed, right?
That's correct, yeah. So he has quite a few, I guess, complaints about police brutality. He's also one of the officers involved in the Jeffrey Smith killing from 2016, which I know was in litigation. I don't know if it still is or not. But and that's another reason why it's important to speak out. You know, I wouldn't be able to live with myself if I didn't try and prevent someone else from this happening to someone else, and especially by this particular officer. If something had been done, you know, maybe if people brought more attention to it when it happened with Jafford, as opposed to the time that it took because of all the things that us impacted family members have to go through and what the community organizers have to go through to get this information out there, then maybe my son would still be here. So it's very important to let the public know that Michael Tushita of the St. Paul Police Department is still out here. He's active. He's been, I found his information in a few recent killings in St. Paul. One of them was Chantrell Murdoch, which I believe was in Belle Plaine. He was he was called there to pick up the body cam video. And again, St. Paul and Belle Plaine are not near each other, so I don't even know why he would be involved. He's from the Western Division of the St. Paul Police Department. And then I was told, I haven't verified it, but that he was also listed as one of the officers on the scene with the Michael Stowers killing in St. Paul last winter. And so there's just, like I said, when this happens to your family, you start paying attention. You don't have a choice. When it comes to your front door, you don't have the ability to ignore it anyway, or to wish it away, or to not see it for what it is. I could never look at the justice system as a whole the same as I did before, and I could never pick up the phone and call 911 for anything.
So one of the things that we like to do here on the show is we really want to talk about the victim and, like, who they were as a person and humanize them. So can you tell us about Brandon Keys, your son?
Yeah. My son, Brandon, was 24 years old. He is my youngest child. He was a very loving son, brother, grandson, uncle, nephew. And the center of his life was his son, who was then 5 years old. And that was his, for a 24-year-old to take the time and energy in the way that he went about being present with his son and spending time with his son was amazing to watch. He had the same experience with his father, and he definitely loved to teach him new things. He taught him how to fish, how to ride a bike, how to swim. They would take nature walks together. They loved music. Riding around listening to music was something that they liked to do a lot. But that was his number one priority, and that says a lot about his character and what was important to him. And why it was so difficult when he was denied his right to be in his life. And Brandon, he just loved anything to do with animals. He loved the outdoors. He loved to cook. He was a great cook. He loved to feed you. Holidays, he could make a whole spread with all the fixings. And he also loved to work on cars. He was a self-taught mechanic. And so he was quiet. To himself a lot, but he was growing and maturing into just someone who lived his life the way he wanted to live it, and made no apologies about it. He was just an amazing person, and I miss him. I miss him very much.
So your son Brandon really loved his son. So can you tell us about your grandchild?
Yeah, so my grandson is now 7 years old. Unfortunately, I haven't seen him for a while. His mother was there. She was the last person that held Brandon. She begged for paramedics to help. And it's been difficult, but that's, unfortunately, now I understand what my son was going through on a different level of when you're being told by someone that you don't have access. You don't have access to this child that you've been in their life their whole life when you've done nothing wrong. But my grandson is a lot like his dad. Prankster. Always laughing. Very, very active. Brandon taught him any sports you can think of, or tried to introduce him to it. And they both have a lot of energy. their birthdays are a week apart. And so they just, you know, when you see one, you see the other. So I just see so much of Brandon in him. And, yeah, he's just fun to be around and such a inspiring young man. He just is full of life.
So we are here on Views from the Ground, Views from the Damn Ground. We're talking to Lisa Keys, which is Brandon Keys' mother. And for my last question of the night, I know that you are connected, as you were saying, nationally to other impacted families. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I've met a few impacted mothers, and you know, there's a kindred spirit. You know, when we meet, without saying any words, we understand. We understand the totality of the loss of everything that comes with it. And so these mothers that I have met have encouraged me. They have lifted up my spirits. They have inspired me to use my voice. And when we come together, especially if there's, you know, more than a few of us, there's power there. There's power there. And I would just tell people to, you know, watch out for us, because, you know, when you took our children away from us, you ignited something within us. And from the powerful women that I have met, you best believe that we're never going to give up. We're never going to stop speaking about our loved one. We're never going to stop seeking accountability, transparency, and justice, if there is such a thing. You know, justice would be having our loved one back, and that's not going to happen. But we'll do everything that we can to illuminate what's happening and to lead it. You know, there's plenty of activists and people in the community that, you know, do great work, but this is something that gets overshadowed a lot. These lives, these were lives that were taken. And the trickle effect of what that happens, that we're, you know, I'm blessed enough to have a grandchild. You know, some of these young men and women that were taken never had a child, so they don't even have that. But yeah, it's game on, you know. And every time I even try to heal some more and say, you have to accept what happened, then I get a sign. I get a sign from the universe that tells me, no, you're going to fight. You're going to stand up. You're going to speak out, and you're going to make a difference. And that's what I'm here to do.
Yes. Well, I just really appreciate you. And I'm so glad that we met each other last week, and I remember I went and talked to my friends, and they were like, yes, Lisa's just like the nicest person. And
thank you.
Yeah, and I completely agree, and thank you for coming and telling us about Brandon Keys and your story. And yes, justice, we need justice. So
absolutely, and thank you so much for having us, or having me, and for, again, just being willing to listen and not using any prejudice about Brandon's story. I appreciate it.
Of course not. I mean, like, it's like Miko said earlier today, it's the narrative wars, right?
Absolutely.
You know, after they killed our loved ones, they want to assassinate their character as well. So
absolutely.
And, you know, that has nothing to do with a 7-second interaction.
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
So we really appreciate you. Thank you so much. And with that, we are out of here.
Support Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting Obie Original and the Black Atlantics High Life Dance Party, Saturday, July 5th at the Turf Club. High Life is a musical genre originating from Ghana that incorporates the melodic and rhythmic structure of African music with West